The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good morning this morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh new smart talk all day. It is Monday the 5th of January 2026 and you are on the clock with Erin, I am not your slave, Green. We've got lots to talk about today. Welcome back. Welcome to 2026. We had one day on Friday, but we're here for the full week and then we got another public holiday coming up next week. Let's get the show started. Let me remind you of the Loyalist Charles Farquharson Will Competition, open to junior and high school students across the archipelago. Also, on the clock is still running a T-shirt magazine recycling drive. If you'd like to see some of what's being created with the magazines, let me know, and we'll arrange something. We've got lots to talk about today, local headlines and international headlines. Of course, there is the Donroe Doctrine. We have to talk about the Donroe Doctrine. And joining me today, Crystal, darling Sergeant. Morning.
Good morning, Erin. How you doing?
I am good, thank you. How you doing?
I'm okay. I'm making it work.
All right. Yes, you're making it work, zooming in from the Zoom room. So if there are any disruptions in the conversation this morning, they're likely technical. But I'm glad you could join us anyway, because guess why, Miss Crystal Darling Sergeant?
Why?
You are today's daily dose of positive. If you turn to the Tribune.
Really?
Yes, if you turn to the Tribune, today's Tribune, page 8, there is this story, Bahamian advocate chosen for U.S. leadership program. When environmental advocate Crystal Darling Sargent was selected as the only Bahamian from among thousands of international applicants for a U.S. exchange program, excitement soon gave way to anxiety as the reality of leaving her home and family set in. Still, the 32-year-old pressed forward, becoming one of just 65 participants chosen for the U.S. State Department's Community Solutions Program, an initiative aimed at developing emerging leaders in energy, environmental protection, human rights, women's empowerment, and security. Mrs. Darling Sargent, who has long been active in her community, volunteering in areas ranging from theater to environmental causes and hosting an environmental podcast, applied after learning about the program through a friend. Crystal, you want to tell us just very briefly about the program?
Yeah, sure. So the program, the Community Solutions Program, started last June, and a part of that program was 3 month in-person practicum that I started in September. Mm-hmm. So we started out in Washington, D.C., and I spent most of my time in Houston, Texas, where I was engaging in a lot of community initiatives, especially green spaces and doing community initiatives and working with a lot of the grassroots organizations there.
Good. Did you?
And in December, I went back to Washington and I graduated from the program with a certificate in the energy and the environment.
All right.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And the program officially ends in June. But this year, I'm working on a project called the Aquamarine Project, which is a community-based project that I've been building while I was over there. So I'm looking forward to executing that to inspire students in the Bahamas to learn about our natural environment and our cultural heritage.
Awesome. Were you able to get in the water at any point in time?
Oh, so they didn't really have beaches per se. Since I was in Houston, I was able to go to Galveston. There was a beach there, but they had a lot of signs up saying not to go in the water, so I wasn't testing it. And their beaches don't necessarily look like ours either. So, I did a lot of work with the bayou, and they had a lot of protection of the Buffalo Bayou and the area, the historical areas around it.
So, all right, that's awesome.
That was a part of it.
Awesome. Thank you for being our daily dose of positive today, and hopefully soon, but not, you know, not too far away, we get to talk more about the program that you're developing for the Bahamas. Crystal, let's delve into the headlines. Let me go straight to the Guardian headlines. Here we go. Government warns against travel to Venezuela. Three minors die in separate incidents, police say. Consumer Protection Commission recovered $203,000 for consumers in record 2025 after capture and removal. Venezuela's Maduro is being held at notorious Brooklyn jail. And in today's Tribune headlines, family finds mom dead in PMH ward, three children dead in separate weekend incidents, and priest warns police don't use uniforms to bully public. Also, Trump signals Cuba next as Bahamas issues travel warning for Venezuela. I want to touch on the Tribune main story, family finds mom dead in PMH ward. Let's read directly from the article, quote, send my case to a lawyer and let's sue PMH, close quotes, were the final words of 36-year-old Clanisha Adley. Told her family just hours before they found her cold and lifeless in a hospital ward with staff allegedly unaware. Nearly 2 months after her death, Clanisha's parents and her 16-year-old daughter are still reliving that horrific discovery every day, shattered, searching for answers and demanding accountability in what they describe as a clear case of negligence. They shared photos, messages, and audio recordings of Clanisha in pain, detailing a harrowing account of the events leading up to her death during an emotional interview with the Tribune. Full stop. The second set of stories I want to touch on just quickly, Crystal. Three minors die in separate incidents, police say. This is in today's Guardian. Police are investigating the deaths of three minors who died in separate incidents during the first 3 days of the year. The first incident happened on New Year's Day in Pinewood Gardens, New Providence. Police said a 7-year-old girl became unconscious after reportedly eating food at home around 6 p.m. She was taken to hospital where she was pronounced dead. That story continues on page A3. The second incident happened on January the 3rd on the island of Eleuthera. Police said a 10-year-old boy was at the park playing with other children around 4 p.m. when he collapsed. EMS responded and the boy was later pronounced dead. Police said the boy had a history of, quote, similar episodes, close quotes, but was not suffering from any illness at the time. The final incident happened on New Providence on January 3rd. According to police, sometime around 3 a.m., two children, ages 3 and 4, reportedly became ill at a home in Nassau Village. Both children were transported to the hospital by their mother in a private car. Despite medical intervention, the 3-year-old child was pronounced dead by a doctor. An autopsy will be conducted to determine the exact cause of death in these matters. These are two tragic stories. They speak to, I think, a duty of care and the question of whether those who had a duty of care for the individuals involved lived up to said duty of care. The Princess Margaret Hospital at one point had a patient's advocate. They had an office called the patient's advocate. I imagine there was an officer assigned to that office whose title was the patient advocate. Does that office still exist? Does it still exist? Even if it exists, is it functional?
Right? I've never heard of that.
I'm 49 now, so about 30 years ago, I broke my toe. I think I broke my toe. I'm not sure because I was unable to get an X-ray at PMH. When I went into PMH and was sent to the X-ray department, the security officer at the door told me, cheapest I come back in 2 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
So I was trying to figure out, like, what do I do with that information? Like, what do you do when you've gone through a process and staff in the hospital send you to an office and then the security officer tells you, cheapest you come back in 2 weeks, you know, like you ain't gonna get seen. And I was trying to figure out what to do. And I walk in.
He was a security officer in, you know, like in PMH defense. He probably observed things and was saying that.
I mean, no, I'm not mad. Hold on.
But I mean, you know,
I'm not mad at him.
Had the better idea.
Yeah, I'm not mad at him at all because security officers are now expected to operate like concierge staff wherever they're assigned.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
We're taking advantage of them, right? Anyway, I walk in through the hospital. I see this door that says patient advocate. I don't think there was anybody in the office at the time. But the point is, the office exists. And the question is, how functional is it? How does it operate? Does a patient who is not ambulatory, who's not mobile, cannot move themselves, how easy is it for them to access the patient's advocate? And what happens when a patient accesses the patient's advocate? Let's go to the phone line quickly, producer. And then I want to just touch on the tragic deaths of these kids. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Ms. Green. Happy New Year to you and to your guests again.
Happy New Year.
My concern now. Mm-hmm. Is about these three
kids.
The two here in New Providence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They make it seem like it's some related with some food item that these kids have eaten.
It's possible. What? That's what I was thinking. Is it that the two kids in the same household ate something that was contaminated in some way?
Being you're on the same wavelength.
Yes.
Me and you have the same thought of mine. Maybe the 7-year-old, mm-hmm. she ate something, some food, something and died.
Yeah.
The two, the 3 and the 4-year-old in the Aso village.
Yeah.
They eat something and one died and one, I don't know the condition of the other one.
Mm-hmm.
But what are these children eating now?
All right, so let's think about it. The first thing I thought about was, did the food stores, the food supply in the house, did it become contaminated either by pest droppings, like rat droppings, or did it become contaminated by insecticide and during an attempt to spray the house for bugs, right? Is it that the food was contaminated?
Or was it contaminated by something stronger, too strong for
right.
the children
to
eat?
Right, that's another question. Did children gain access to what we may call an edible or a food product
these
infused?
Cookies, these gummy bears.
Yeah.
Now they're saying the children eat the food. But, I mean, come on, it's too...
It could be
food. Green.
Yeah.
It happened too often. The areas that it happened in.
Yeah.
So close. Pinewood Garden, Nassau Village.
Yeah.
It's like a line between.
And so, like I said, that's why environmental factor could be a cause as well. Imagine, hypothetical, a pesticide company is hired to spray or to provide service in communities, maybe outside of homes, but in communities in close proximity to each other. Said pesticide or insecticide somehow seeps into a home, a household, and contaminates food stores, right?
I say this to you in closing, because I'm going to continue listening to you.
Yes, sir.
Ms. Green, you're very, very kind today.
Yes, sir.
You're very kind to me.
But listen, let's stick to the point, though. That is.
No, I'm saying you're very kind, but what you saying?
Because
you know it's not that.
If
you know it's not that.
I want to talk about the duty to of care right now.
Hello.
Go on, Crystal.
It could be something else. It could be something like they may have purchased, or the parents may have purchased some food item that was targeted toward kids. You know, kids eat certain things. And they may have purchased it from one of the local stores between that area, and it may have been contaminated, and people just aren't aware of it yet. That happens sometimes.
Okay, well, I hope, if that's the case, I hope they find out real quick before we lose some other little kids.
Yeah, Uncle, I don't want to go past that point, because you're right, I'm getting to that, right? There is a chance that the kids ingested food products infused with cannabis, right? And that's the result of the, right? But there's also a chance, especially with the two kids in one household, right? There's a chance that both kids have an undiagnosed allergy, right? And that they had a severe allergic response to foods.
Of whatever they ate.
Right, because they're related, and one had a far more severe response as possible.
And they're so young,
right.
3 and 4.
But see, the point is to rule out, if we think it is something far more dangerous, right, or nefarious, like kids getting access to...
Well, we'll wait to see the results, and I hope, you know.
Yeah, but let's...
pray for the family, and, you know.
Right, in this time, because no matter how it happens, the grief is theirs to hold, right, no matter how the death occurred. But if we... suspect that it may be connected to consumption of dangerous drugs, we want to rule out everything else, right? Because and we have to have the conversation. Why? We all have a duty of care to children. We all have a duty of care to children. And it's important, like with this cannabis discussion, when it first began 3 years ago, four and a half years ago, I raised a question with a local cannabis advocate, right, about how they will respond to, how they will address cultural attitudes and norms, right, existing around cannabis. For people who think cannabis is harmless, right, there's also this instinct that it's also kind of harmless to my kids, and we forget that we have to still prevent access for children. One of the reasons why... Right, like if the government would ever be completely and totally transparent with us, right, about their rationale, one of the reasons why a government would oppose the decriminalization or liberalization for recreational use is because of a lack of a social framework that would protect children in spaces where cannabis is now legal. Right? Mm-hmm. We're not protecting them when cannabis is illegal. Will you protect them when cannabis is legal? I wanted to put those two stories together because at the root of it, there's a duty of care, right, that cannot be ignored. None of us can ignore our duty of care to children. That's why even in the story about the kids, I was disturbed when I read the words of the police officer who said, I'm reading it right now. Here we go. Police said the boy had a history of, quote, similar episodes, close quotes, but was not suffering from any illness at the time. So, right? Listen, you can't just, as a police officer, you can't just say that out loud. I was going to say to me, but that sounds biggity. You can't say that out loud, right? If the boy had a history of similar episodes, right, you cannot rule out that he was not suffering from an illness at the time. He was not diagnosed with any specific illness at the time, right? So you're talking about a duty of care. If a child has had similar incidents, is this not a signal that there's a medical crisis? Is there not a duty of care that signals to those who are responsible that we must take every measure to find out what is causing the quote-unquote similar episodes? Right? That, when we talk about duty of care to children now, watch this. Let's be realistic. The boy lives on the Family Islands. What are the diagnostic services available on the Family Islands or available through the public care system? And what does it cost for the family, for Family Island family to come to New Providence to access those services? What does it cost to his education, right? But is it that our thinking is limited by our environment because diagnostic services are not readily or easily accessible or available? It means that the disease don't exist unless it's diagnosed. We have a duty of care to children. This is a legal duty of care, the new Child Protection Act. But we all shrug our shoulders, brush it off. They ain't my children. And oh gosh, what parents say to themselves. Crystal, good morning. You still there? Okay. I got some texts coming in.
I'm still here.
Here's a text. What I find confusing is the Ministry of Health has made no announcement on what was ingested. In normal countries, health bodies send out national alerts on the food in question.
Yeah.
See, and so...
So, for example, what I was getting at was when I was away, mm-hmm. when I was in the States, there was an outbreak at one of the local stores. They said two people had died or gotten seriously ill from consuming these certain salads that were sold in the food store. And so they put, they said they're warning people. So right off the bat, as soon as the first person died, they were like, there's a warning on this. Like they pinpoint what it was mm-hmm. that the people ate. And so this is why I'm saying it's so, like when the information comes out from the police, often it's so vague. It's like you can't really place anything. Is this a public health concern? Could this have been something that they got out of a grocery store, a public place, a purchase off the side of the road from a vendor? No, we don't know. So mm-hmm. it's like the story is there and we don't have a context whether or not we should be concerned about our own kids, right?
Hypervigilant.
So it's kind of like, okay, once again, what am I supposed to do with this information?
Yep.
Other than say condolences to the family, right? Respectfully.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What action can I take as a parent to make sure that my child is not? Because that's a lot. That's three incidents is a lot.
And it's unreasonable to say, well, control what your kids eat. My kids are out of my presence for the entire school day, right? Even if I cook food for them, not all schools have the capacity for students to store food, to consume in the proper way during breaks. Like hot food has to be hot,
right.
Cold food has to be cold. It's like, we don't, right? When it comes to kids, we don't care about the rules. But see, as a vendor, I got to get my health certificate.
And I wouldn't even get on, because that reminded me of something that I was told a while ago. Mm-hmm. There are some children who literally are sent by their parents to purchase certain beverages that they should not be purchasing. And, you know, people always send their kids out in the store and this place and that place.
Mm-hmm.
But there have been allegations. I don't know if there's
Crystal, ever been that's
like,
old culture.
Anything,
no, hold on.
People,
Crystal, that's old culture. The people sending the children to the shop to buy the half pint. See, but they used to wrap it in a brown paper bag.
But anything.
Yeah,
exactly,
no.
Exactly, but not just that.
Cigars.
But not just,
and
yeah,
things.
But other items as well, right?
I don't know if you could hear the music, Crystal. We're going to go to a break.
Okay.
When we get back from the break, if any more texts on the subject come in, we're going to touch on them. But I have a great text here to transition us to our next subject. Have you ever heard about the Don Road Doctrine? Well, we're going to talk about it today. You guys, you're on the clock with Aaron. I'm sure I don't want to be a slave, Green. We'll be right back.
Wait, you know what's going down tomorrow?
Nobody, what happening?
Joe bring any knife to school? He could do Junior in?
For what?
Well, he fooled with Joe girl.
Mother sick. And you know Junior don't back down for nothing. So that means he got a big fight tomorrow.
So whose side you want?
Side? I trying to stay in school, not Simpson fan. You gotta tell somebody about this fight.
Tell somebody? I ain't no snitch. I mean cool, sino.
Wait, if you so cool, then you need to stay in school and stay out of the fight.
Yeah, but if I don't hang on Joe's side, him and he boys coming for me next.
All right, so we definitely gotta tell somebody. We gotta prevent the fight.
What I say, I don't want nobody calling me snitch.
We could just call Crime Stoppers. You could report what you know, and nobody gotta know it's you.
So how do I work?
All you gotta do is call them, or you text them through the Crock Crime Bahamas app, and nobody can know it's you.
Then the police come looking for me for more info, and when they finish with them, Joe them coming looking for me?
When you call Crime Stoppers, the calls go directly to Miami, and they don't ask nothing about you. Then if you get the pen from them, and you can claim a reward later using that same pen.
Plus, everything's scrambled, so nobody can read what you're saying.
Calls 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
Struggling to find your financial rhythm? Make that move to Fidelity and let us help you orchestrate your financial goals into perfect harmony with free financial coaching sessions. Make that move today. Call 356-7764.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
At Cleveland Clinic, care is everything. So when your primary purpose is to care for the world, you'd start with your community until you're accessible anywhere. You make complexities your specialties and put compassion before anything else, all to redefine what's possible for everyone, everywhere, for every care in the world. Cleveland Clinic.
Welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Y'all forgive me for that little gap there. I so deep inside these notes. Producer, play that song for me. Oh, I didn't send it? That's my bad, producer. I must have sent it to myself. So, let's get into the show. Here's the text. Crystal, you back? Miss Darling, sorry?
Yes, I'm here.
Awesome.
I'm here.
I know we cut you short during going to the break just now. You want to finish up with what you were saying?
No, I was just saying that parents should be very, and adults in general, should be very careful about what they send their children to do, the little missions. Make sure that it's safe. Make sure that the children are safe. Make sure they're going in a safe area. And make sure they're not purchasing anything that they should not be purchasing, right? Because there are certain things they shouldn't be. So, and we all know what those are. So.
There we go.
That's all. Just a little conscience for 2026. We have to be very careful with the children.
Absolutely. So here are two texts before we transition. Happy New Year, but this year's starting off rough. We have to stop talking fool and polite. Politically correct and speak truth before other kids die. How could a police state reckless assumptions without investigating? This is so serious. Who are they trying to protect, the shop owner or kids? This seems so disrespectful to civilians, especially our kids, because lives are at stake. Remember COVID? Everyone was briefed and many, many laws and instructions were given immediately. But it seems to me that they are only caring about integrity of businesses or the culprit instead of kids' lives. Our country is a disgrace. What purpose does it serve to hide truth that could save lives? I mean, it's a public
I'm not saying that it was a shop or a vendor or anything, because it may not have been that. That may not have been the case. But I was just throwing it out there. Like, that could be anything from what you discussed, Aaron, with the caller, to, but we don't have a clue because these reports are not, they don't have enough details in them for us to understand what's really happening.
And sometimes it's a matter of a lack of grammar and syntax. Like, it's just that whatever report was given was constructed poorly, right? And the
How eloquent.
The police are my friends, man. The police are my friends. Okay, so here is the text I wanted to read to transition to talk about what has been happening in the Caribbean over the last few weeks, and in particular, over the last few days. Here's a text. Aaron, do you recall a little over 2 months ago, I asked yourself and Cecil, quote, when was the last time the U.S. went to war over oil, and what do Nigeria and Venezuela have in common? Close quotes. About 6 months ago, I texted another show during the tariff wars to say it appeared to be a campaign of distraction. And when the distraction is no longer effective, the next step will be war. 2 years ago, I texted that the U.S. embassy is a fortress. The signs are in front of us. So we do know that the U.S. forces invaded Venezuela, a sovereign state, over the last few days and removed, some would say kidnapped, some would say against international law and standard practice, the current president of Venezuela, Maduro, right? We weren't sure what it was for. The U.S. keeps telling us it's about drugs. It's about drugs, but here's what we know. We know that roughly only 8% of the narcotics that enter the U.S., only about 8% enter from the Caribbean basin. Here's what we also know. Apparently, U.S. agencies have already indicated to the White House that despite the terminology used, Maduro does not necessarily qualify as a terrorist or as a, being a part of a narco-terrorist organization. So we know that, right? It's not. It can't be about drugs. Trump just pardoned some huge drug dealer the other day. Right? Is it about oil? Well, Trump went into Nigeria before Venezuela, or threatened to go. No, there was a strike in Nigeria, hey? They said that he's rescuing the Christians. However, over the weekend, I came across an interesting analysis, right? It was titled Expository Analysis of DT's Venezuela Invasion. Fortunately or unfortunately, I do not know the author of this piece, but I did not write it. And it begins like this. The real reason the U.S. is invading Venezuela goes back to a deal Henry Kissinger made with Saudi Arabia in 1974. And I'm going to explain why this is actually about the survival of the U.S. dollar itself. That's what the person is saying. It says, not drugs, not terrorism, not democracy. This is about the petrodollar system that has kept America the dominant economic power for 50 years. And Venezuela just threatened to end it. Here's what really just happened. Venezuela has 303 billion barrels of proven oil reserves, the largest on earth, more than Saudi Arabia, 20% of the entire world's oil. But here's the part that matters. Venezuela was actively selling that oil in Chinese yuan, not dollars. In 2018, Venezuela announced it would free itself from the dollar. They started accepting yuan, euros, rubles, anything but U.S. dollars for oil. They were petitioning to join BRICS. They were building direct payment channels with China that bypass SWIFT entirely. SWIFT is a banking system. And they were sitting on enough oil to fund de-dollarization for decades. Why does this matter? Because the entire American financial system is built on one thing, the petrodollar. In 1974, Henry Kissinger made a deal with Saudi Arabia. All oil sold globally must be priced in U.S. dollars. In exchange, America provides military protection. The single agreement created artificial demand for dollars worldwide. I'm going to stick a pin there and just add this disclaimer again. This statement, I don't know who, like I said, when I received it, and it wasn't even sent to me. I happened upon it, had no author attached to it when I saw it. However, I find it fitting to say that this statement was not endorsed by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. All right? This statement was not endorsed by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. You know, we always look to Mr. Mitchell, the Minister of Foreign Affairs, to tell us what we can and cannot do in times of great global tribulation. So I'm going to stick a pin there. It's an interesting explainer, right? The writer says it's not about drugs, it's not about terrorism, it's not about democracy, but it's about dollars for oil and the petrodollar dollar and how the petrodollar underpins the American financial system. It's a very interesting read. I want to head to this next. Well, let's start in the region. So on Saturday, CARICOM issued a statement from the Bureau of the Conference of CARICOM Heads of Government on Military Action in Venezuela, CARICOM. But before we go to CARICOM, let's see what the Ministry of Foreign Affairs says. Statement by the Bahamas on the present situation in Venezuela, 4th of January, 2026. The Bahamas takes note of the statement of the CARICOM Bureau of Heads of Government issued on the 3rd of January, 2026 and supports that statement. Of particular importance to the Bahamas is that all parties involved act in accordance with international law. Owing to the current security situation, the government of the Bahamas advises Bahamians to not travel to Venezuela. Just stick a pin. You did not have to tell me that. Okay, let's get back to the statement. We have expressed our concerns through diplomatic channels regarding the safety and security of a Bahamian national who is currently unlawfully detained in prison in Venezuela. If you or someone you know is currently in Venezuela and requires consular assistance, please email consularcrisis@bahamas.gov.bs. That's consularcrisis@bahamas.gov.bs. Now, it turns out that there is a Bahamian in Venezuela right now, at least one. There may be more. But let's go to the phone line. Good morning, caller. Good morning, caller. Are you there? Hi, I can hear you now. Good morning, caller. There must be something wrong with your phone line. I heard a little movement. Please call back. The numbers to call, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, 242-300-5720, toll-free, Family Island listeners. If we jot quickly to Bahamas warned citizens not to travel to Venezuela amid security crisis, producer Les Prep, that caller, we'll find that the article says the Tribune understands that the individual unlawfully detained in Venezuela is Oran Monroe, a pilot who has been in Venezuelan custody since 2021. So see, Kamala, we have a vibe with Venezuela as well, you know. I mean, we got a little vibe. Good morning, caller. All right, if you're having difficulty with 325-4259, try 323-6232, 325-4316, 242-300-5720, toll-free Family Island listeners, and the text line, as always, 422-GR96, that's 422-4796. So the Tribune article, Bahamas warns citizens not to travel to Venezuela amid security crisis, published yesterday in the online publication, says that the Ministry of Foreign Affairs has also raised concerns through diplomatic channels regarding the safety and security of an unlawfully detained Bahamian in the country. So I guess, Crystal, the first question or the first thing I want to say to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, please give us a set of rules and instructions on how we are expected to behave at this time. Please don't treat us like Kamala Prasad Bisesar treated her citizens and talk to them like little children, disregarding her own constitutional obligations to citizens, right? Like, don't do that. Don't go to the international media and chastise us for exercising constitutionally guaranteed rights and freedoms, right? Like, come to us and talk to us about how the Bahamas is impacted and affected by this militaristic action, right?
I agree. Mm-hmm.
And then let us make reasonable determinations about what we will and will not say in the public domain.
Because I have seen a lot of comments and listening to a lot of people, you know, rhetoric, I suppose, online. Mm-hmm. And it has been, it's apparent, and that's why I like that you brought up a lot of background and context, because I think that's what a lot of these comments are lacking, right? There's official news, there's official information, right, that mm-hmm. we heard, and I think a lot of it was pretty clear, right? And then aside from that, I think the context should be considered, but a lot of people are falling into these echo chambers online that confirm political biases. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is fueled by fear, because we know that we are a small nation and we have our limitations militarily, and even sovereignty has its limitations, our type of sovereignty, right?
Yeah.
So I think what we need to be doing right now as a Bahamian public is to take a step back, maybe a few steps back, and broadly listen to, read, watch different stories that may not necessarily align with your biases, but really look into like the history, which is super important here when we think about and we observe what's happening to our neighbors down south. And yeah, listen to anything that listen to the various
news sources,
angles,
yeah,
and perspectives and news outlets, so that you could get like a more holistic
I got you, a perspective on what's happening and unfolding before us. I want to read from an article, Bowen, Trump's action could set precedent for authoritarian powers across globe. This is from the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation, published yesterday online. Trump tried out a new nickname. So you're going to talk a little history
I'm
now.
I'm back. I got dropped. I'm sorry.
All right.
But so, you go ahead, Aaron.
Right. We're reading from...
I just have one more. Yeah.
We're reading from Bowen's Trump's action could set precedent for authoritarian powers across globe, BBC, 4th of January, 26. Trump tried out a new nickname, the Don Roe Doctrine, for the declaration made by President James Monroe in 1823, warning other powers not to meddle in America's sphere of influence in the Western Hemisphere. Quote, "The Monroe Doctrine is a big deal, but we've superseded it by a lot." Close quotes, Trump said at Mar-a-Lago. Quote, "Under our new national security strategy, American dominance in the Western Hemisphere will never be questioned again." Close quotes. He said that the president of Colombia, he said that the president of Colombia, Gustavo Petro, had to, quote, "watch his," I'm replacing that expletive with a euphemism, "derriere." Close quotes. Later, he told Fox News that, quote, "something's going to have to be done with Mexico." So a quick point here. Y'all don't mind how Trump and this guy, Pete Hegseth, talk to people on the internet. Mm-hmm. You are not allowed to talk to people the same way they talk to people. Mr. Mitchell, right. Minister of Foreign Affairs, will tell you that. And if the FNM gained power... If they were in power, their Minister of Foreign Affairs would tell you the same thing. Don't be like Hegseth. Don't mind it. Hegseth, Pete Hegseth, is the Secretary of Defense, you know. Here's from the article, after Venezuela operation, Trump says the whole hemisphere is in play. We're playing what, Porky? Anyway, this is from Politico, published on Saturday, the 3rd of January, 2020. Sixth, Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth said Venezuela's longtime dictator Nicolas Maduro, captured in an overnight raid and extradited to New York on Saturday to be indicted on narco-conspiracy charges, quote, had a chance, close quotes, to leave on his own before becoming the latest example of a leader paying a high price for not responding to Trump's pressure, quote, "He effed around and he found out," close quotes, Hegseth said of Maduro. Remember a few weeks ago when I was talking about this phenomenon where adults are just adopting juvenile language, kids' language?
Why is there so much profanity in everything?
Because this is war, baby. This is war.
My God.
Like, you.
That's wild.
Producer, play the song Confrontation by Damian Marley when you get a chance, please. This is war. I mean, that's war language. Let me rephrase that. That's war language. Maybe this is war. I'm going to read from that, continue reading from that article. Trump outlined a more aggressively expansionist foreign policy in his inaugural address nearly 1 year ago, shocking longtime allies with threats of making Canada, quote, the 51st state, close quotes, and colonizing Greenland, an autonomous region belonging to Denmark. Over his first year in office, his focus on several different foreign policy fronts, the Middle East, Africa, Europe, and his thus far futile attempts to resolve the war in Ukraine have frustrated some allies who've noted this is far from the isolationist, quote, America first, close quotes, approach he ran on. In his prepared remarks Saturday, Trump cited the Monroe Doctrine, a 200-year-old foreign policy blueprint that has seen something of a revival in conservative circles. It stems from President James Monroe's 1823 declaration of a U.S. sphere of influence in the Americas that also served as a warning to would-be European colonizers to limit their aims to their own affairs, right? So, Crystal, I have a doctrine myself. It's called confuse the enemy. First of all, maybe Trump is already confused, because how do you reference yourself to be a king, right? Prompting no king protests throughout the continental USA. How do you reference yourself to be a king and then call into play the Monroe Doctrine anyway? Because any European descent king gotta be a king descendant from Europe. Yeah. Anyway, so I say, let's confuse the enemy. CARICOM Reparations Committee, let's put in a petition for Greenland. As a part of our reparations, we want Greenland. See, we're going back before the transatlantic slave trade. The story of St. Patrick running the rats out of Ireland, that's a euphemism for the genocide of the Africans found there when Europeans entered that space. The story of the leprechaun, that's a demonization of pygmy Africans that lived in that area when the Europeans discovered it and them living there peacefully. So let's take our reparations way back. We want Greenland. We want Greenland. It's like Monopoly, eh? Okay, break it up a little bit. Trump, you can't have everything. You want from Greenland all the way down to Argentina? And everything in between? I ain't sure. Producer, play that song, Shine and the Titanic Formal, please, if we get a chance. Got some text here. It says, hey, 30 people were killed in a village in Nigeria over the weekend. How come you missed that international headline? Okay, so is this some pro-Trump perspective, propaganda? Because
there were a lot of international headlines that we missed.
There weren't any Christians killed, were there? Because if there weren't any Christians killed, why are we talking about it, right? Isn't that the play? By the way, there's a report out, the U.S. dollar is just strengthened after the Venezuela operation. You know how your adrenaline shoots up like after or during and after strenuous physical exertion, and then shortly thereafter you fall out? And Aaron, you need to study the Monroe Doctrine. It's the cornerstone of U.S. foreign policy. I'm certain that I said that it underpins U.S. Did I not just read that text? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, give me the critique plainly. Give me the critique plainly, Texter. I only cracking jokes.
This is a jokester. This is the same thing I was saying earlier. It's not a competition. Go back. Learn some background, get some context. It's not a debate. It's an opportunity to learn more about the history of the policies, what's been happening in the region over the last 200 years. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to go back that far, 50 years, 100 years. But these are the those are the cause and effects that mm-hmm. show what's happening today, or provide more explanation to what's happening today.
Absolutely. We only have a few minutes left in the discussion, but You know, I have some questions. This state of affairs raises lots of questions for me. And I wonder, first is, why are we not talking about this more as a country, right? Why are we not talking about this more? Is it that we're waiting for the state or the political class to create a space for the conversation? They don't want to talk about this. Because here's what arises, right? For me, listening to this conversation, following some of Kamala Persaud-Bissessar, that's the leader in Trinidad's commentary, is the government policy, like, Kamala very plainly told the people, y'all mind your manners, mind your mouth if you want visa and if you want to go to the U.S., right? And I think, how does that resonate in the mind of someone who never envisioned themselves going to the U.S.? Probably would never get a passport because they don't see themselves ever traveling.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What do these policy considerations mean to them? Where you say that we must consider for the sake of access to visas, whether it's a tourist visa, whether it's an immigrant visa, whether it's a profession, you know, a working visa, that, right? For people who will never go. Or in other jurisdictions, see, because in the Bahamas, the not the allure, right? But like, it's more likely a U.S. visa is more accessible for Bahamians, right? But what about countries further south? Like, what does it mean? What does this conversation mean to Trinidadians who have applied over and over again to get a U.S. visa and can't get it? Or Jamaicans who have applied over and over and over again to get a U.S. visa and can't get it? Right.
And some of them who have to travel, you know, so.
Right. And so do we need to have I think we do have a conversation with the diaspora, with Bahamians in the diaspora, because I see Bahamians in the diaspora as being most concerned about visa status for the nation. Right. And when I say the diaspora, not just people who permanently, like they're permanent residents, and they're living abroad or working abroad on long-term contracts. I talk about the people in the diaspora who you just move back and forth so frequently that America is a part of their being. Right? What are the effects? There's another article here I wanted to read from. You know, as soon as the producers start playing the music, we're going to have to stop. Trump repeated vow U.S. would run Venezuela. Trump's vow to run Venezuela repeated more than half a dozen times at a news conference in Florida on Saturday sparked concerns among some Democrats. Now, mind you, here's another article. Rubio says U.S. won't govern Venezuela, but will press for changes through oil blockade, right? See, but in the Bahamas, we worried about what the leader of government and business in the House is saying, right? We're not worried about what the secretary to the cabinet saying, maybe the financial secretary, but not the secretary. The unions, the workers, the police, everybody, they want the word from the prime minister, right? So whose report should we believe? Trump repeated vow U.S. would run Venezuela. And then they go on to say, Cuba, Colombia, Mexico could be next.
So what does that mean for us?
Or should we
be right next door?
Absolutely. And should we believe Rubio's report?
What would that do to immigration?
Yeah, Rubio says U.S. won't govern Venezuela, but will press for changes through oil blockade. Right? What are the implications for the rest of the region? I'll say this much. Maybe. If you didn't get the warning, maybe you're already occupied. You guys have a great day. This has been On the Clock with Aaron. I don't want to be a slave, Green. Stay tuned. Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Newry is up next.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, streaming on GuardianTalkRadio.com and the Guardian Radio app. Nassau, Bahamas.